Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And after the president's wall and shutdown speech last night and the Democrats' response, New York City Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went on Rachel Maddow's show on MSNBC, and the congresswoman from New York City talked about New York City.
I represent New York's 14th congressional district. We are 50% immigrant. I represent the Bronx and Queens, Jackson Heights. Over 200 languages are spoken in my district alone. We enjoy some of the highest rates of economic activity. And the Bronx itself has had some of the highest rates of economic growth in all of New York City. And that has been directly correlated with our embrace of immigrants. New York City overall is an immigrant city. And we enjoy a very large amount of economic and cultural prosperity as a result.
So Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez from New York did something there that the senator from New York, who gave half the Democratic response, failed to do, defend immigration as a good thing. Chuck Schumer, as he said himself, was there to do just one thing.
My fellow Americans, we address you tonight for one reason only. The President of the United States, having failed to get Mexico to pay for his ineffective, unnecessary border wall, and unable to convince the Congress or the American people to foot the bill, has shut down the government.
Okay, all well and good. Maybe that's how they fight the shutdown. That was his goal. But what Senator Schumer and Speaker Pelosi did not do in their Democratic response was to fact check the president's lies or clarify his distortions, such as...
Over the years, thousands of Americans have been brutally killed by those who illegally entered our country, and thousands more lives will be lost if we don't act right now.
That, of course, has been Trump's central distortion since he announced his run for president in 2015. Can you believe we're coming on 4 years of this? That immigration from Latin America equals crime. Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez did call him out.
In the actual address, there was falsehood after falsehood, and we have to make sure that we get our facts straight. Everyday immigrants commit crimes at a far lower rate than native-born Americans.
And here's a little more fact-checking of that context. WNYC's Matt Katz filed this 30-second report after the speech last night.
In a 2016 study by SUNY Buffalo and three other universities, researchers found a consistent pattern. When immigration goes up, crime goes down. Since 1980 in New York City, the immigrant population has spiked 49%, while the number of assaults has dropped 49%. Robberies and murders are down more than 80%. Across the river in Newark, the immigrant population increased 93% since 1980, but assaults, robberies, and murders have all plummeted during that same time.
So WNYC's Matt Katz, with not just a fact check, the president may have stated a true fact that there have been thousands of murders over many years committed by undocumented immigrants, but a distortion check, a context check. Here's one more. The president tried to frame his argument for the wall like this.
America proudly welcomes millions of lawful immigrants who enrich our society and contribute to our nation. But all Americans are hurt by uncontrolled illegal migration.
Trump from his speech. And that was another area where Schumer and Pelosi chose not to engage on the larger context, but Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez did.
He's talking about legal immigration. He's trying to restrict every form of legal immigration there is in the United States. Mm. He's fighting against family reunification. He's fighting against the diversity visa lottery. He's fighting against almost every way that people can actually legally enter this country, forcing them to become undocumented. And then he's trying to attack their undocumented status. This is systematic. It is wrong. And it is anti-American. And again, those women and children trying to come here with nothing but the shirts on their back to create an opportunity and to provide for this nation are acting more in an American tradition than this president is right now.
Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Rachel Maddow last night on MSNBC. With us now with his response to last night and more is another member of Congress from our area who has become a committee chairperson because of Democratic control. We've heard so far from New York's Gerald Nadler, now chair of the Judiciary Committee, Nita Lowey from New York, now chair of the Appropriations Committee, and New Jersey's Frank Pallone, now chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee. He was on yesterday. And with us now is Congressman Elliot Engel of Westchester and the Bronx, who has just become chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. His district is basically southern Westchester and the northern Bronx. He's been in Congress since 1989 and is now the Foreign Affairs Chair. Congressman Engel, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure.
And listeners, our phones are open for any of your reactions to the dueling speeches last night, to Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, or any question for Elliot Engel as the new chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Congressman Engel, 30 years in Congress. Is this your first chairmanship?
Well, it's my first chairmanship of the full committee. The period between 2006 and 2010, when Democrats were in control, I was chair of the Western Hemisphere Subcommittee of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, which deals with the Western Hemisphere, obviously Latin America and the Caribbean. So this is the first time I'm full committee chair. It's quite an honor to be appointed the chair and elected by my colleagues, and I'm raring to go. It's been very frustrating, of course, because of the government shutdown. It's really kind of set all the agendas back a bit. We haven't, on any of the committees yet, have the appointments of new members to committees or the changing of people in committees. So none of us really none of the chairmen really know what and who is going to be on our committee. So it's a little bit frustrating to do that because obviously you can't get hearings or other things unless you have everybody appointed. And one of the things with Secretary Pompeo, he promised me that one of the first orders of business when I asked him would be to come to the committee where we can grill him on a number of things and just have discussions about things that we're really raring to go. But until the committee is really appointed, we're told it's going to happen at the end of this week, beginning of next week. Mm-hmm. So I'm patiently waiting. But we have lots and lots and lots of things to do. One of the things that frustrated me is the previous Republican Congress did no oversight whatsoever. They gave the president a blank check. Whatever he wanted, he did, and they just kind of sat there, with their thumb in their mouth and did nothing. We are going to do lots and lots of oversight and lots of legislation, and I'm really looking forward to it.
The president, in his speech last night, urged Americans to call their members of Congress and say, fund the wall. Has your office been getting any such calls this morning?
No, in fact, in my district, as you mentioned, Westchester and the Bronx, people are overwhelmingly opposed to what the president is attempting to do. We talked about immigrants before. You know, I'm the grandson of four immigrants that came to this country 110 years ago, and the immigrants that are coming today are essentially coming for the same reason. They fear for their lives. They want a better life. You know, immigration, rather than the president portrays it as a negative, it's a positive. It's one of the reasons why we are running ahead of Europe. You know, they are not even replacing themselves. They can't get people to have jobs. And we are a strong nation because of immigrants, and I resent the fact that the president is trying to make immigrants the focus of people's ire. You know, I from time to time get somebody who yells at me and says, all these illegal immigrants are coming in, why aren't you doing anything about it? And a lot of them are immigrants themselves, and I pointed out, you came to this country, and they say, well, they came legally. I said, well, if people could come legally, of course they would choose that, but these people are being blocked from coming legally, so they've got to do whatever they can do. That's why our whole system is broken, and we need to fix it, not be afraid and keep these people out.
I was thinking about the way the president used a good deal of that speech last night to detail individual crimes committed by individual undocumented immigrants. And I was thinking of what if 100 years ago, some president of the United States had done that with individual Italians who were members of the mafia. and used it as an argument to therefore close Ellis Island or cut the amount of legal immigration from Italy in half, as the president is trying to do with Latin America. It scrambles the mind from today's point of view, where Italian immigration is considered uncontroversial. But that's exactly what he was doing. It was as if somebody was singling out individual crimes committed by members of the mafia when he's talking about MS-13 members and things like that, and saying, therefore, we shouldn't let Italians in.
Well, you're quite right, and that's what's so ridiculous about his rantings and ravings. I mean, it's just absolutely disgraceful. I would have hoped that someone who came from New York City, as he does, would, and we are the capital of the world in terms of immigration, in terms of people coming to visit us, in terms of the United Nations, I would think that he would know better, and he should know better. But, you know, with this president, you just don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. If it's not immigration, you know, it's trying to denigrate our alliances, NATO and the EU, and then the next day it's something different. And I think the Mattis resigned because the president doesn't take anybody's advice, doesn't listen to his advisors, doesn't listen to the intelligence community, just wakes up on a whim. The other day he was ranting about Iran, and then later on said, "Well, Iran can do what they want in Syria; it doesn't bother me," or something like that.
Well, drill down on that a little further, because Trump seems to be back to the Mattis position, ironically. This may have gotten lost for most listeners in all the other news, as people are just starting to pay attention again after the holidays. But here's what the president said on December 19th, in conjunction with an order to withdraw all 2,000 U.S. troops from Syria in 30 days.
So our boys, our young women, our men, they're all coming back. And they're coming back now. We won.
That was December 19th. But now we're back to what Mattis wanted, to what critics call endless war. Here's National Security Advisor John Bolton in Jerusalem over the weekend on what they now say needs to happen before withdrawal.
To do so from northeast Syria in a way that makes sure that ISIS is defeated and is not able to revive itself and become a threat again, and to make sure that the defense of Israel and our other friends in the region is absolutely assured, and to take care of those who have fought with us against ISIS and other terrorist groups.
So last month it was, we won, they're coming home in 30 days. Now it's, there's no timetable. We can't withdraw our troops from Syria until ISIS is defeated, as something in the future. Congressman Engel, as chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee now, what do you make of those reversals?
Well, there have been so many. These aren't the first. We're almost numb to all the reversals. The president comes out with something that's not workable. You know, I call it fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants diplomacy. Whatever he wakes up and decides to tweet, that's what he does. And there's no consistency. If we're going to get out of a place, and I don't think we should stay in places forever, it's got to be done the right way. You just can't pick yourself up and pull out and say, to hell with everything. It certainly has implications for our allies, Turkey and Israel and other nations. And I think Bolton was trying to push the president or pull the president, you know, towards his way. It seems, by the way, that for me, we need to, it's one of the things I'm going to try to do as chairman, focus on the issues that this administration has stripped out of our foreign policy and those that are defined by American values: climate change, migration, democracy, the rule of law, women and girls, human rights. These are things that are never talked about, but we're going to talk about them in the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Which side of that policy question are you on, by the way? I have a feeling you're on the Mattis John Bolton side, even though there are progressive Democrats who argue that the U.S. military presence in the region makes things worse and inspires more terrorism than our military presence prevents. Which side do you want to
look? I don't think we can be the world's policeman, but I don't think we can just up and leave. I think we've got to do it. Of course we want to get out. We don't want endless war. But I think there's a way you do it, and there's a way you don't do it. And the way you don't do it is by the president flitting from side to side, swinging back and forth and back and forth. I think Mattis was absolutely right. We need to analyze. The greater goal needs to be getting out, but we need to analyze the best way to do it. I mean, we don't want to leave Our friends, the Kurds, who have fought side by side with us, our loyal and faithful allies, we don't want them to have a bloodbath with the government of Turkey coming in against them. So there are consequences to what we do. We have a direction. The direction would be to get out. But you just can't wave a magic wand and do it because it's too much destruction. So I don't think that's a choice. I think we need to wind ourselves down, but do it when it's smart. We don't want to have a situation where we get out and then we have to come back in again. That's what happened with President Obama, and there was a lot of criticism there. And I think that we need to be smart about doing these things. But long range, and by the way, that's why I want to, again, assert the jurisdiction of the committee. I've long called for a limitation on the 2001 war authorization, which is the AUMF. I'm very concerned about the Saudi-led war in Yemen, and we're pushing legislation now to curtail weapons sales that would get involved in the Yemen war. I want to make sure that Congress does a lot of oversight. Mm-hmm. We have all these questions. Putin and Trump met in Helsinki months ago. Nobody knows what they talked about. North Korea, you know, again, swings back and forth. We're working with Kim. No, we're not. He's cheating. No, he isn't. Those kinds of things. And I think that there's plenty of work for us to do.
John in Gowanus, you're on WNYC with Congressman Elliot Engel. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My question is, there's a huge difference in rhetoric between Pelosi and Schumer and Ocasio-Cortez in terms of Trump's past. She talked about Trump's kind of history of racism as a landlord and also the Central Park Five, and especially the 2015, candidacy. When will the rhetoric change in Congress to kind of address these things that he believes as opposed to policy?
You want to hear people like Pelosi and Schumer get tougher on Trump's underlying racism?
Well, I like that it's being brought to the surface, and I think he appeals to the emotional, the emotional reaction of his base. And, you know, maybe the Dems need to have an emotional reaction, too.
Well, let me say again, that's part of my frustration and our frustration with the government being shut down, because it's awfully hard to do a lot of these things when the shutdown sort of takes the whole center stage. So I do think that both Schumer and Pelosi, spoke with both of them yesterday, are raring to go. But, of course, this holds us down, and it's, of course, a national disgrace. But I think you'll see, once we get over this hurdle, that the Democrats will be very aggressive in terms of what we do and what we look at. Trump has a long record, as you say, of racist tendencies, and you know, I really believe that what's happening at our border with Latin America is racist. I mean, I think when people were coming over from other countries, we didn't hear the clamor, the anti-immigrant clamor that we hear now, and Trump instead fans the fire. You know, I think it was either Pelosi or Schumer who pointed out that the Oval Office has traditionally been used when a president speaks to the American people to sort of unite the country, to bring the country together. And here he's using this venue to the exact opposite, to divide our country apart, to play partisan politics.
What did you think of Pelosi and Schumer's strategy or approach last night in their Democratic response? Because they didn't go to a lot of the places that, for example, Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez did when she went on television after. They didn't call out his racism. They didn't call out the benefits that immigration brings to the United States. They just said, we can find common ground on border security if you end the government shutdown.
Well, I don't know. Obviously, that was a decision that they made in terms of what they were going to coordinate and what they were going to say. But no one should have any doubt that Pelosi and Schumer are right there with the same views that I've articulated, that Alexandria's articulated, and others have done that. No one is under any illusion about this president or this administration, and you're going to see a lot of aggressiveness in moving in the right direction. But of course, you know, once we have this put this behind us, you know, the disgrace of all of this is having federal employees not able to pay bills, and Trump doesn't seem to care. And again, that takes up all our time. But I don't think there's going to be any holding back. I don't think there's going to be any punches pulled. I think we're going to come out swinging. We just have to get the government running again.
Desiree in Lower Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Desiree.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think what would be really helpful is if the Democrats and the leaders of the party could explain to the American public what exactly exists on the border right now. It's unclear to me how much has already been built and what's being proposed. And I'll leave it right there.
Thank you, Congressman.
Well, again, I think there are a lot of things that we're going to mention and talk about. We're going to first get through this crisis. I would hope that it would be ended in a reasonable time. If not, I'm sure we'll have lots to say. But make no mistake about it, the Democratic caucus leadership, rank and file, we are all opposed to what Trump is doing on immigration, what Trump is doing with his nonsense with the border wall, playing to his base, not bringing people together, driving people apart, which is actually what we shouldn't be doing.
So how's the shutdown going to end? Both sides kind of dug in last night. How do we get out?
Well, we're not prepared to support this fence at all. So if the president doesn't step down, then I'm afraid we're going to have a longer shutdown. It's really just untenable. And I don't know. We've never had a president who acts this way before, and frankly, it's an embarrassment.
One of the points that he made in the speech, and that other Republicans have been arguing too, is that Senator Schumer and other Democrats have voted for or supported more border fencing in the past. And Trump says now they oppose it just because he's the president.
Well, how about the Republican senators towards the end of December in the last Congress, all voting for bills to open the government and do work? The Democratic majority in January puts those same bills out. We all vote for them, and almost every Republican votes against. This was the Republican Senate bill. It's just kind of a joke.
And certainly the Republicans have a long history of doing this. Remember when cap and trade was a Republican idea?
Yes.
When Romney Care, which President Obama adopted as Obamacare, was a Republican idea. And then as soon as President Obama adopted those things, then all of a sudden, you know, he was Karl Marx. But so the Republicans do that. But what about your side? I mean, is there a way out that involves saying yes to some kind of expanded fencing in exchange for DACA or something?
Well, I think there'd be a large difference of opinion on that. There are people who support DACA, as I do, who feel that you shouldn't do both, mix apples with oranges. Personally, for me, it's something I would look at. It's something I would consider. I feel very strongly about DACA. I feel very strongly that the Dreamers should be allowed to stay in the country and work their way towards citizenship. Right now, of course, we're in crisis. It's very kind of hard to have negotiation over something like that when people aren't being paid, and it's become more and more of a crisis each day. But I would hope down the line we've got to take care of DACA. That's a priority of mine. I know it's a priority of our caucus. The Dreamers have every right to stay in the country. They're as American as you and I. And I just think, again, we have to, because we have a president who is so inconsistent and who comes up with all kinds of different things on different days, we need to, as a Congress, assert our priorities and remind the president that we are a co-equal branch of government. We're not subservient to him. Nancy always likes to point out that in the Constitution, the legislative branch was talked about first before the executive branch. And I don't think we should be a rubber stamp for the administration. If they do something right, then we ought to support it. But when they don't, like what the president is doing now with his nonsense about the wall, then we should oppose it, and we're going to continue to oppose it.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio, where we have a few minutes left with Bronx and Westchester Congressman Elliot Engel, now with Democratic control of the House, the new chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Before you go, on yesterday's show, Congressman Pallone, Frank Pallone from New Jersey, was on. He's the new chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee. And I believe you're on that committee, too. Am I right?
Yes.
As chair of a main committee that deals with climate change and energy policy, he is resisting calls from Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez and others in the Progressive Caucus to stop taking campaign donations from the fossil fuels industry. Here's a clip of him with me on that yesterday.
I don't think I've ever drawn a line and said that just because someone or some company, you know, has business before our committee, which 60% of the legislation in the House of Representatives comes before the committee, that that person or corporate. Because I just think that if you start going down that road, then nobody can contribute to you.
So, Congressman Engel, what's your reaction to that? And as a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee yourself, do you take fossil fuel industry donations?
No, I have not. I have not. But I want to tell you, I'm for public financing of campaigns. I think that what we have in New York City ought to be expanded to the federal government. I would love it if I never had to ask anybody for another political contribution. I'm for public financing of elections, and I think we should move in that direction so there'll be no talk about any kind of conflict of interest. The problem, Brian, of course, is these campaigns get so expensive. You know, we don't want a situation where only rich people can run for office. You know, go back to the way it was when we first established the Republic. Only the landed gentry can run for office.
Well, but what we have now is people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and others saying, well, we're not going to take money from any corporate PACs. Mm-hmm. And we saw that Bernie Sanders was actually financially competitive with Hillary Clinton in the primaries in 2016.
Well, look, I think it's a larger picture that we have to look at, and we clearly have to look at it. The current system is broken. Big money, even raising money from wealthy people who write out lots and lots of checks, that isn't even healthy. So I would like to go to a system where we take the money out of it, out of the politics. I know it's a difficult thing, but I think mm-hmm. if we keep emphasizing it, that's the real way to go, to a public financing situation.
And I understand you don't want your party to unilaterally disarm if the Republicans
right.
are going to keep taking big corporate donations. But
that's
part of
right.
part of the argument at the moment is that fossil fuel companies should be seen as in their own category, and that your party and certainly members of the Energy and Commerce Committee, which has a climate change agenda in your portfolio, that fossil fuels companies should be looked at now the way tobacco companies have come to be seen because of the implications of the way they run their businesses.
Well, because of my votes through the years, I don't think fossil fuel companies are interested in me very much. I think I voted against their agenda time and time again.
What would you say to Chairman Pallone about him taking fossil fuel money and digging in on that?
Well, look, I think Chairman Pallone is an excellent member of Congress, and he's an excellent chairman. And I think that, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think that he also feels that why should Democrats universally disarm if Republicans aren't doing that. I think everybody's got to make it up for themselves. I mean, I just think that you need to look at a person's record, see how they voted through the years before you can say that a contribution tainted them in any way, shape, or form. You know, again, I don't take money from fossil fuel companies, but I leave that to each person to make a decision for him or herself.
Congressman Elliot Engel, his district is in the Northern Bronx and Southern Westchester, and he is now the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's keep talking during the session.
Absolutely, Brian. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.